Welcome to episode 35 of Shooting Womp Rats. I'm Daniel.
I'm Don.
And with us today is special guest Mike Cheshire Fraley.
I didn't think. How's it going, everybody?
Wait, did you just out him?
Did I out him? What is this, like, online shaming or something?
No, I thought he wanted to keep his thing separate. I could be wrong.
The two are used together a few other places. I'm not terribly picky.
All right, because I don't want to be the one that makes, you know, Thanksgiving dinner awkward.
Well, you know, it's not like we have a Bruce Wayne Batman thing going on. I mean, I have had a couple of times where, you know, I've had to arrange Cheshire and Mike Fraley to be seen in the same room, but, you know, it just got too complicated.
No, seeing as we brought up the whole Batman-Robin thing, are we talking like the really creepy 60s, 70s Batman where we're kind of thinking maybe Burt Ward was more than just his ward? Or are we talking like the new Batman where they're like kind of cool?
Well, I think that I was more of the 1950s Batman, the one where the Batmobile really wasn't anything but just a normal car.
And it looked like a bat?
It didn't even look like a bat.
I don't know. I saw one where it just had like the funny front on it. It actually looked more like a Catmobile than a Batmobile. But whatever. Star Wars! Daniel, Star take Wars. It away. Gain some control of this thing, man. It's out of control. It's spinning.
It's like herding cats. Wait a minute, I am GMing my own podcast. And now for the news.
All right, guys, it has been a while since the last podcast, so we will have two of everything. So for your money today, you get two for one. Starting off, we've got Adventure Seed Monday, number 42. The mission type is to repair a technical asset. The mission terrain is mountainous. Complication is an unnatural hazard. A mission opposition is a space armada. And the hazard, we actually have a hazard this week, is a competent imperial. Dun, dun, dun. Now, Daniel had gone off and suggested early on when I posted this in the G+ community that the players are part of a team of technicians sent to repair an automated listening post deep within the mountainous range on the planet Brentil. Brentil? Brentil. How's that, Brentil?
There you go.
All right.
I like bread pails.
Bread pails? I love bread pails. I prefer Italian bread, but yeah. Anyway, they must discover a way to pass an Imperial space battle group orbiting the planet. As they ascend the treacherous terrain, their climbing equipment starts to fail. It has been tampered with. Who's the saboteur? Once they reach their objective, they learn that they've been herded toward the listening post via the machinations? Because of the manipulations of a brilliant Imperial officer, can they get out and will they get out? Bum, bum, bum! So anyway, I love it when people chime in on those. All right, Adventure Seed Monday, number 43. Mission type is to steal a ship. Yes, we're going to steal one. The terrain is a low population world. Mission complication is a moral quandary, so there's going to be plenty of role-playing opportunity. The mission opposition is going to be droids, and the special hazard is a legendary dark side character.
Now, those moral quandaries are great things for players, and it's something that people don't play around with enough. Give them stuff where there's no right answer, rather than having to choose between right and wrong. Letting them really deal with those issues is a great complication.
I like that. I mean, sometimes, I don't like to do it very often, because Star Wars is sort of a black and white universe, and I have found that as a GM, if you go dark, or if you go dark too often, or if you give them sort of those grays too often, it sort of snaps people out of the whole Star Wars feeling.
That is very true.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, almost a palpable thing. I mean, you can almost feel it as a game master when the energy changes in your group. And honestly, it is something that is really hard to snap a group out of once it's there. But anyhow, yeah, the quandary is always an interesting thing. It always allows for a lot of role-playing. And I am always amazed at the party interplay when something like this comes up, because almost always the characters come from it from polar opposites. I mean, there's always going to be someone that's like, well, we need to go off and do this, and someone that's like takes the complete opposite direction almost always. I mean, you couldn't script it any better. But again, you know, you as a game master have to decide when enough is enough and go ahead and move your plot ahead. All right, Character Tuesday, number 42, Darby Mestules, born of a Jedi hiding from Order 66 and her life partner, a former Killian Ranger. From a very young age, he was forced to be more disciplined than the other children. His mother drilling him with many private lessons, and a father that who not only ingrained in him what it was to be responsible to others, but also taught him the use of weapons and other survival skills. Now, while still a young man, Darby's mother left the father and son to save them when an Inquisitor was tracking her. Now, Darby never found out what happened to her. His father soon after went into seclusion and later joined the Alliance to restore the Republic. Now, during this time, working for the Alliance, he continued to practice the lessons his mother had taught him. Little did he know these were to strengthen any force ability that he had. Now, with a little bit of training and no direction other than his highly developed sense of right, he searches the galaxy for his mother.
This is a character that would really go great with a campaign set in the area around James Spawn's The Dark Times.
Yeah, I was trying to... I wanted to get sort of a Jedi Force sort of trained person. And I tried to make it as accessible as I could to each era. Well, at least, you know, Rise of the Empire, Classic, and possibly the very beginning of New Republic. Like, from, like, 4 ABY up to, you know, like, 10 ABY after Dark Empire. Mm-hmm. That's what I was going for, anyway. I like the character. This next character, I really like. Character Tuesday, number 43, Lorden Butts. yep, Lorden Butts. And his catchphrase is, I'm gonna kick butts. Now, formerly a Special Forces sergeant, he is mean but gets the job done. On his last mission, his team were far behind enemy lines with a mission to complete. The team decided it wasn't worth the risk, but Lorden completes it anyways, leaving the team behind. Now, when he gets back, they've all been killed by a group of Imperials. Lorden continues to carry that guilt with him, having left his team behind. Now, to cope, he drinks too much. And though a good leader with good skills, he constantly pushes people away. Inside, he's a seething cauldron of anger and great sadness. And he will accept any mission, no matter how bad the odds are, just so he can get back at the Galactic Empire.
Episode 2 and 3! Anakin!
It's like I killed them all, and not just the men.
So did they get their butts kicked?
Uh-huh. That's right. I like the character.
It's a good concept. infantile humor aside.
Hey, don't be making fun of me. This is a safe place. Don't make me use my safe word. Rumor Wednesday, number 42. Emperor Palpatine has... or had a previously unknown cloning facility on the backwater world of Cestus. Cloning technology. Spiardi tubes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Rumor Wednesday 43, I heard of this bar magician who not only serves drinks, but can read people's minds.
Jedi bartender.
A bartender. All right, Planet Thursday.
They had something kind of like that in one of the adventure journals, so that's a pretty solid adventure thing that's pretty well... established, so yeah.
I'm not familiar with that story. Where's... Do you remember what it was?
Oh, well, good heavens, that would be far too specific. But no, it was more... It was... I've read so many of those things, but there was a guy that was always hanging out in one of the bars with the drinks, it's one of those things that everybody'd seen him do something that was really strange, but nobody ever understood quite what was wrong with the guy or how he was able to do that. So
I like the idea of maybe even doing like bar tricks, bar magic.
Oh, I like that idea. You know, carry it a step further. It's a put an archetype to it. It's a fallen Jedi who just performs these things for drinks.
That would have been my original idea, that it was a force sensitive of some type maybe one that's received training or one that has not, who's performing these bar tricks.
Cool.
That was the original idea. So anyway, moving on. Let's see. We've got two planets, and then we're on to the Ronto Buffet, guys. So Planet Thursday 42 is Sira 4. Sira is a gas giant in a system surrounded by a very dense and hard-to-navigate asteroid belt. One of nearly 50 moons, it is the largest, with a Type 1 atmosphere, light gravity, and a sweltering 135 degrees or more at the equator. Most species stick to the southern continent and its majestic purple, green, and yellow frond forests. The planet is surprisingly covered by large oceans, a rarity for terrestrial moons. The moon is also unique in that it is corporately owned, but no one seems to know by which company and for what purpose, though stated on paperwork as used for natural resources. Now, verification of natural resource exports cannot be confirmed. With a small official population of 60, this is indeed an oddity. Planet Thursday 43 is Liana 9, is the ninth moon around a gas giant, made sure I got that in there, in the Tipia system. A satellite world with a temperate climate, Type 1 atmosphere, and a standard gravity. With a moderate hydrosphere, the surface is dominated by a supercontinent and accompanying island chains. The oceans are deep, with towering cliffs surrounding the main continent. These cliffs range from a few meters to over 1,500 meters in height. The continent itself is dotted with many majestic mountain ranges. The planet has little to offer besides raw materials. In fact, the Galactic Empire holds it in so little regard that it has a low-end starport and a governor who feels the post is more a punishment than a career move. Home to 1.1 million sentients, it's also the homeworld of the Toma, a sentient race of small stature and Stone Age society. Isolated in small communities throughout the continent, this species has little or no contact with the colonists.
I don't have any character of the week. For those of you who have been keeping up, I'm busy trying to cram in finishing up Asylum, converting it over to D6 space, and we'll be picking that back up again, not next week, but the week after. Now, let's belly up to the buffet. Mike, are you hungry?
I am so hungry. I could eat a Ronto.
Well, the question is which end of that Ronto do you want to eat?
I'll let you guys take first pick, and I'll just start eating at the other end. I am not picky.
He is hungry.
We've already gone from butts to moons to gas giants. I mean, I may as well take this one from a tail end too.
Actually, you know, real quick, just a Ronto. I keep running this through my head. Now, in A New Hope, the sixth Star Wars movie in the series, or the first movie released, in the special edition, they're going through Mos Eisley, and there's this big, long-necked creature with these great big feet. Is that a Ronto?
That is a Ronto.
Now, that's a lot of meat.
That's
on
my understanding.
Thing. All right, yes. With the big, big floppy ears and the jaw that's going, oh, dee-dee, as it's being flipped around.
Yeah. That's the one.
That's the one. Well, all right.
Sarah McNeil from the Rancor Pit forums brings us the idea of Top Blaster, which is a dog fighting in space.
Yeah, he takes us right into the danger zone.
Complete with 80s rock soundtrack and everything.
I play the crap out of that song.
I found it to be a great concept. I think Don's agreeing with me. When it comes to naval battles, starfighter battles, capship battles, C.R. McNeil's really got a good head on his shoulders about it. And this is yet another one of those examples.
Right. I think the thing about this is that I really liked the idea, and it had the feel of the chases mechanic from Savage Worlds. I don't know if anybody here is real familiar with that. I did have a couple of problems with it, though. And the first of it was that it really, really changes starfighter combat quite a bit. And I do not like the idea of a new advanced skill whose sole purpose is to pad out a dice pool. Now, I did like the opposed rolls and the use of the tactic skills for a bonus. I thought those were really great ideas. Some questions I have, though, is, first of all, how does this apply to multiple actions? You know, are there reactive, active dodging? Is maneuverability or shields taken into account? I completely missed those, and I don't think he touched on those. I think, basically for me, Sierra McNeil has a very good idea here, and I guess the question is just how much crunch you really want to make.
Yeah, I saw this, and I thought that it was a fantastic idea, as you said, that there are some things that are really kind of lacking in some of the nooks and crannies that we haven't quite explored with the second edition rules. And dogfighting is one of them. I think a lot of us were looking forward to seeing that in the Rogue Squadron source book, unfortunately canceled. I even went looking into the Star Warriors, the tabletop game that West End Games did ages ago, to see if they had any mechanics that would transfer over easily into second edition. And unfortunately, this was just a whole new level of crunch in Star Warriors. So it's its own tabletop game, and there are some ideas in terms of starfighter slips and movement that are interesting. But this is one of those things where it's really hard to tie all those little odds and ends together.
Yeah, I definitely agree that I think that the rules as right now, they work, but there are some really big holes in them. And I definitely do believe that is a section of mechanics that could really do with a rewrite.
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt there.
No. Go ahead, Daniel. It's all friendly here.
Let's do it like this. Take the idea, grab up a bunch of miniatures from that FFG X1 miniatures game, throw them on a table. How would that work? Do you think that would... You guys think that would be a better idea?
Well, I tell you what.
That would bankrupt me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't afford them. I tell you what, though, I will go to Walmart and I'll buy like a little 12-pack of Hot Wheels and put the Hot Wheels on the table.
That idea came to me. I feel that it would make better sense in a miniatures sort of thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys. I mean, just real quickly, I mean, some of the things that I... Because I just ran a Starfighter Combat 2 weeks ago for my Thursday night group, and everybody loved it. But I will tell you, I mean, I had two capital ships just, like, broadsiding the crap out of each other and a whole bunch of starfighters moving around, and I had three players that were out there flying ships. The thing that I saw that was really lacking was, number one, missile rules in Star Wars D6 just are really not very effective and not very good. The other thing was capital ships shooting at starfighters. You know, you have a capital ship, sometimes they have tens of turbo lasers or point defense guns and stuff of that nature. Some of them have the scale difference, makes it really hard for them to hit, but I mean, when they've got like point defense batteries and stuff like that, that's all starfighter scale. So when a ship goes through, do you just arbitrarily pick the number of weapons in that field or that arc that specifically target that ship? Do you do a combined fire? Do they have a suppression of area? You know, there's a lot of questions I as a game master have that I think that really could be expanded on for at least that section of the rules.
Yeah, this is the one thing, is that it's really difficult when you're dealing with mass scale battles. I've tried running a few miniatures things with my kids, and of course that's designed for 7 and 8 year olds, but that's it's one of those things where this is difficult to say how many of these guns are firing, who's doing what, how are we coordinating this. I've just got to say that I'm really glad that my players generally don't love the idea of starfighter combat in space, unless you're all on one ship doing a Millennium Falcon type deal of running or chasing down something. So I've never had to sit down and deal with it, because that's going to be quite a nightmare to untangle.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, along with the dogfighting in space supplemental rules that Sarah McNeil posted, at the same time, Garkle had suggested an area denial or battery fire rule mechanic. And basically what that was, first of all, it was a very good discussion. And it originally started with Garkle. He had suggested rules in which a capital ship would fire all of its weapons in a given arc. And the pilot traversing that arc would roll. Now, averaging the gunner skill without fire control bonuses, figure out the range band to be saturated, and if successful, then the amount the roll, add that to the roll for the terrain difficulty, if any. A pilot trying to traverse that arc must make an opposed piloting roll, and if successful, nothing happens. But if a failure, compare this to the table provided, and the only real problem I really had with this was that a set amount of damage at different levels of failure. I didn't like that. I did really like the idea that even though it was capital scale damage, it was still treated as Starfighter, though, because it was saturating an area, not trying to specifically target someone.
The one thing that I really liked about this idea was that... well, with the complete vaporization of an entire party, I have always wanted... No. The
TPK,
the thing that
you all die.
That made this attractive... TPKs are wonderful. My players love me for that. Now, the idea is to saturate this idea, saturate this area of space, and then the way that I was reading his post was that the starfighters can then make the decision, do we want to try to, you know, is it to our tactical advantage to try to traverse the saturated area of space. So it isn't as though they're finding out about this post hoc that, oh, by the way, this area that you just flew into just got saturated, make your roll. But more like the Star Destroyer captain has said, intensify the forward batteries, I don't want anything to get through. And then, like, well, do we really want to try to get through? And I think that when you put this into the put the ball in the player's court, this becomes a whole nother game.
Yeah, I really liked this rule a lot because it was it added something to the game that wasn't there. It made sense, and it was quick and easy. I love quick and easy when it comes to Star Wars. I don't like if I add rules to my Star Wars game, I want to make sure that they're light and easy to apply. And I thought that was the case with this. Now, C.R. McNeil, who does a lot with the starships and stuff like that, had a similar idea that when firing a flak part pattern, treat as a combined action. And basically what you do is you calculate the number of emplacements firing in a given arc, decide on the range band to be saturated, and then calculate the skill level plus the combined action modifier plus your fire control plus your scale modification, etc., etc., just like you would normally. Basically, what would happen is this is the terrain difficulty that the pilot must overcome for the saturated area, and a successful roll, no damage, failure compared to the difference on the chart as that he had provided. And what I like about this chart is that damage is not rolled randomly. Instead, a damage level is set, like controls, ionize, and stuff like that. In fact, actually, between Garkle's and C.R. McNeil's versions, I think I like this one the best.
It seems like, basically, with all this going down, it would work in a virtual tabletop situation, but with actual rolling dice, you're going to start getting into calculus territory, and I don't know about you guys, I suck at math.
Math is evil! Math is bad!
Do math. I came here to roleplay. What? Why are you giving me these dice? Jeez.
It's kind of like Metallica and Fire. Fire bad.
Don went a little crazy with ship conversions. He even picked up a few ships from the Old Republic, the MMO. He converted the ships and posted them. These are the Gage class transport, Terminus class destroyer, the Republic fleet system conductor class short haul landing craft.
Yeah, that's a mouthful.
The Centene Dynamics Ministry class orbital shuttle, the Herald class shuttle, the GSS-3, and then the Bantha class assault shuttle.
I did that one for you. That actually only makes an appearance in a Rogue Squadron comic book from Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
That is a cool looking ship. Has anybody here seen it besides me?
Yeah,
I saw some images of it once you posted it.
Yep, I tell you what, I took one look at that and fell in love with it. I was just like, I gotta make stats for that.
But as always, you can find the stats as well as a short blurb about each craft. I'm gonna have them listed on the blog.
Awesome. You know, seeing as we're sort of throwing that out there. Another thing that we've got going on, last year I had introduced the random adventure generator. I think it was version 1.2. And I had posted out the community, asked people to go ahead and post some suggestions. We've gone ahead and done that again. I've stickied it in the G+ community. I've made a posting in the Ranker Pit community for people just to post ideas for expanding those tables. And if you're not familiar with it, the table has five specific tables. It has a mission type, a mission terrain, a mission complication, and mission opposition, and finally there's a special hazard. So take a look at that. If you got some ideas, just go ahead and post them up there. It'd be super fantastic. All right, what else do we got out there, Daniel? Oh, we got two species.
Yep, Keith Kilburn. I mentioned him in the last podcast, or one before it. Memory is bad these days. I'm getting old. He is a guy who lives in my city, no less. He posted two new species that he came up with on his own. The Bokura Mai, they are that means of the people, and they're the primitive native race of Bokura Major, or Boko. They've been forced to quarantine zones by Imperials and have been cave-dwelling for some time. They are completely within human range, except for the single exception, they can see in little to no light with no penalty. They are incapable of speaking basic, but they can understand it. Their vocal cords just can't make the sounds, kind of like the Wookiees. They have a very tribal society, complete with chieftains and shamans. Their tech level is Stone Age. And they believe in the... it's Kiltarse, which means of the way. And the majority of them are force-sensitive and both strongly bound to and defined by their actions. The second race are the Kapotish. And
this,
that means that they are of those of the path. They're a displaced race. They previously lived on Telos. They lived in caves. They have little or no technology, and they are now a race of savages, but they were at one time a spacefaring race that once sat on the Jedi Council. The ravages of time have shifted them away from their home planet and their technological standing. Senses are comparable to that of a great predatory cat or large simian. They really receive no applicable bonuses. They have their own native language. They can speak basic, but they find it difficult to do so. They're tribal-based. They have chieftains and shamans as well, but they are technologically advanced and would not fall into a cliche dumb savage category. They are a displaced race. Their home world of Plixish.
Yeah, I think that's one of those words that they probably like, you know, it sounds better in my head. That's what it says when you say it out loud.
Having long since lost to the ravages of the Empire, there are fewer than 20,000 left in the universe. They have prehensile feet that can be used as hands as well as a tail. They get a free non-combat related action while using their off limbs. They are the cat. Potish are strong believers in the Orokum Yata, which is the Great Winter's Light in their language, and the majority of them are Force-sensitive and are strongly bound to and defined by their actions. Now, the Empire considers them insurgents and separatists. They have a shoot-on-sight standing order on them. Both races respect and have a deep reverence and respect for the Jedi, and they're fascinated by lightsabers and their use.
Nothing says game balance like a shoot on sight order. I mean they've got some really cool abilities here, and you know, it's one of those things when I was first reading them, like, ooh, wow, that could get overpowered. That's nice. But, and then when we come to the complication that, yeah, you have to be smart about how you show yourself and how you play this character, this gets really interesting.
The thing I liked about it was that it was pretty obvious that Keith was using the same core concept for both species, but had put a twist on both of them to make them each unique. And I thought that was kind of interesting, kind of looking at the similarities as well as the items that specifically made them different. I like both races. I don't know if I'd use them very often, but I definitely like them and definitely would use them as an NPC species.
Absolutely.
All right, well, guys, I tell you what. Earlier this week, I had read, Dark Horse. I was reading some Dark Horse Star Wars comics, and I had come across, I think it was A Valentine's Story. Has anybody read that one?
Mm-mm.
All right.
I have not.
Yeah, it's Han Solo, Princess Leia. You know, blech, gag. Well, anyway, what was interesting about the story was that it introduced a new starfighter, MTL-1A M-class starfighter, or an M-wing, which was a large hyperdrive-equipped starfighter used by the Rebel Alliance. And the M-class starfighter was formed from a central fuselage and the two angular wings attached at the center. Basically, each wing was tipped with a heavy laser cannon and used the large engine nacelles salvaged from wrecked BTL Y-wing starfighters. And the central fuselage tip contained a large cockpit, two-seater, and while the vessel could be flown by a single pilot, a co-pilot could manage, navigation, computer systems, and secondary systems. But the thing that was interesting about this was that was the only place that it made an appearance. I went up on Wikipedia, I did some research on it, and the most information I could find on this thing was about two or three sentences. So I took up the challenge and gave it some stats.
Wonderful thing to have. Yeah, it's a great little niche starfighter, and to add something interesting to a mission, give them something unique to do if you've got rebel pilots. You know, it's something you don't see very often, and the stats were pretty on par balanced with the rest of the West End game stuff at the time. So, yeah, neat little find.
Yeah, I liked it, and the idea was, and someone, I can't remember, it was either Garko or C.R. McNeil, I think it was C.R. McNeil, had originally suggested that perhaps it would fall into the uglies category, which I didn't, because I think the write-up that I originally saw talked about it using salvage parts from Y-Wings to build, and all the pictures that I saw, they all were uniform in their appearance, so I didn't feel, at least from a creation standpoint, that it really sort of fit in the category of an ugly. The idea I got was it was more like somebody who, using the monkey side of their brain in the Alliance, sat down and figured out, hey, you know what? We have these parts and we have these parts, and it seems like, we have a lot of Y-Wings running around, and we seem to have a surplus of these. How can we best use those? And so to me, it's more of a sort of an ad hoc kind of design, but it's uniform. So I consider it's its own class of ship, not an ugly. No, my take on it. What about you, Daniel?
Error did the story take place in?
They were not married yet, so it would have, rebellion era somewhere.
I see the design being outdated past rebellion era, I would say. Maybe the B-Wing was a replacement for it.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it was balanced. It did its job like it was supposed to. And I can see where the ugly classification could come in. But then again, I feel that it was the Rebellion trying to consolidate its resources with the design.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I was at on it, too. Let's see. Chris Campbell, buddy over on G+, he had shared a write-up for an organization from his game called ICE, the Imperial Clandestine Elite. Did anybody get a chance to look at that?
I did. I even actually, I was one of the ones that helped name the acronym.
Oh! Look at you. Actually, you know what? When I first saw that ICE, the thing I thought of was Archer.
Oh, jeez.
I did. I'm sorry. I think that's ISIS or something. I don't remember.
ISIS, yeah. ISIS is Archer. They are he named them elite, so yeah, they are elite spec force group during the Thrawn era. They are designed to infiltrate, see something or other, and they're to infiltrate, disrupt enemy action, and basically wreck stuff. They've got a good write-up. I like it, and it's something, to consider adding in if you've got a campaign going on during the Thrawn era.
Yeah, I really liked it as well. In fact, I was actually kind of surprised at the level of detail that Chris had thrown in, but was very happy. And by the way, I don't know if he's done moving across state or not. Last time I talked to him and his wife were in the process of a move. She had gotten into a certain school, and they had to move. So, all right, there's a shout-out to Chris.
Don posted a couple of articles on helping players create an interesting background. And it's something that I feel that a lot of players don't really put too much thought into anymore. They're just creating something, putting it on a piece of paper, and they think that they're going to act it out during role play. I feel that it's important that a player has and this is probably leading off into the GM discussion, but I feel that a player needs a background in order to establish their character and to help set up relationships with the other players, especially in a situation where none of the players know each other. But Don's articles were 25 questions to ask your new character and the 5-step background. I actually had one of my players in my campaign follow both of these articles to make his character. I've sent Don the result.
Ah, I don't remember that. I'm drawing a blank. Though I was really kind of surprised at the number of people that plus one both those articles. That I thought was really kind of interesting. Now, a ship appeared in the latest Rebels trailer. I'm not sure if you guys have seen that. It only appears for 2 to 3 seconds. Dromdar Alark, or Alark, over at the Rancor Pits asked for someone to stat it out for him. And seeing as I didn't have a lot of things on my plate, I figured I'll do it. So I took a crack at it. Basically, that's listed up in the G+ community. It's up over on Rancor Pit as well. If you guys get a chance to take a look at it, let me know what you think. I named it the Sahoy Class Light Patrol Cruiser. And what is unique about it is that it carried 4 TIE fighters on external mounts.
I saw the trailer, and it looks like a really, really interesting niche patrol vehicle. So, yeah, I'm when I first saw that and I thought about the four TIE fighter mounts, I'm thinking about what those pilots must be looking like on the inside of the ship.
Yeah.
Just crammed in there like sardines. I mean, it's true Imperial. They can live there. That's fine. It'll be tight, but that's fine. The seats don't recline in there while they're getting ready to go on board their TIE fighters, but that's fine. Really shows, I think, a lot of the Imperial mentality of function over form and get things out there and make it happen.
So anyway, something else I did about the same time that I did the ship was I came up with some ship and vehicle damage levels. And surprisingly, the reason for this is that the level of damage done to a vehicle starship will tell you what systems are damaged, but there are no rules for repairing the actual damage to the body and hull. And I think that might have been just an oversight. So basically what I came up with were a couple of suggestions for taking this into account. For each damage level applied to the body, hull code is modified. So basically every time it's damaged, like lightly, heavily, severely, so on and so forth, what I had suggested was that just like with equipment that is damaged in a fight, that the hull value would drop. Now, for example, if the ship was lightly damaged, you would subtract a pip from the hull value. If it was heavily damaged, it would be minus 1D. And if it was severely damaged, it would be minus 2D. And the ship would continue at that lowered level until it was repaired. And basically what I came up with was just some very loose rules that if a ship was lightly damaged, it would be easy to repair. It would take approximately 1D hours and would cost 15% of the value of the ship. If it was heavily damaged, it would be moderate. It would take 4D hours, cost 25%. And if it was severely damaged, keeping in mind that if a ship is ever severely damaged, on a 1 in 6 chance, that ship has a chance of coming apart in 1D6 rounds. So, I mean, that is a severely damaged ship. Requires a difficult repair roll, takes 8D hours, and would take it cost and stuff like that for parts 35% of the total value of the ship.
That's even if you manage to land it.
Yeah, even if you manage to land it. And I don't know, I mean, I haven't play tested these yet. It's obviously something that you would take or apply into a campaign or a long-term multi-session game where it's actually something that the characters can kind of role play and move around with. I mean, for one-offs and stuff like that, I wouldn't suggest using it, but I don't know. It's one of those areas that I just thought was missing.
It looks like a neat rule of thumb so you can get a framework of understanding insofar as, and I know the way that you structure your rules and structure your games, insofar as it doesn't interfere with the narrative. As the way I do my damage is, well, we're damaged, we're locked in space. Well, how much time is it going to take to repair this? And I think in the back of my head, oh, it's going to take about 5 seconds longer than it takes for the enemies to find you.
Exactly. There's some people out there that like that crunch, though. I mean, I'm sort of a speed of narration or speed of plot kind of guy more than anything, you know, whatever is plot appropriate. But there's people out there that want those numbers, so I...
And for that, this is a really interesting framework.
Well, the other thing I like about it is it sort of fits into some of the established rules already. So it's really more of a tweak and taking part of a rule that's already there and applying it to another area, which is something that I really like about Star Wars D6 in the first place, is that is sort of the modus operandi that they use with their rules. They come up with a rule mechanic and then apply it to several situations.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, okay. Daniel, back to you.
Lyle Theriault from G Plus suggested an idea for a new skill called Instruction. He suggested it be advanced, and the character would be a trained instructor, allowing the ability to make learning easier and quicker for characters. Specializations for a specific skill are allowed, but it has a prerequisite of command of 4D. The time for the skill is 1 day per base character point cost of the skill being learned. The teacher rolls the instruction skill, and depending on how well the teacher does, character gets a character point decrease bonus. If it's very easy, -1 CP, easy, -2 CP, moderate, -3, difficult, -4, very difficult, -5, and heroic, -6. The character point cost can never be lower than 1.
I gotta tell you, yeah, I didn't like it. I don't mean to jump in there, Daniel, but I did not.
It's fine. I think of a usage of it would be, you know, a way for a character to train another character in something, but even then, it seems too much.
I basically, the problem I had with it is I do not think that the free or reduced cost for improving skills by using the instruction skill is really in keeping with the rules as they're written. I mean, how much effort a character puts into learning the material greatly reduces the time it takes to learn. This is done by spending additional character points or to lower the time, and that's basically explained as the character focusing on learning the material. Now, a teacher can teach all day long, but unless the student is motivated, they are not going to learn much. I mean, no matter how good the teacher is. And luckily, I do believe we have an academic with us. Do we not?
Tell me about it.
Bring it on. I mean, you know what?
Here's the thing is that it's one of those things that, I mean, anybody in the faculty lounge will tell you, like, it, and I have seen some of the best professors that we've got, and some of their students fail. Why? Because no matter how good that person is, unless there is a personal investment on the part of the learner, then there isn't learning happening. And I think that that's best represented with character points. We have a mechanic for that. Now, and on the one hand, I am sympathetic to Lyle's idea. I had, years ago, made something that was sort of similar. It was kind of inspired by something that had happened in the radio drama between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Luke Skywalker about accelerating his training. Like, oh, well, we could do something that could accelerate the training, that can get this thing really rolling. And then when I looked at it, I thought, well, though that represents what's happening in that scene, this opens up way too much to be taken advantage of mechanically. If as part of your narrative, Lyle, if you're GMing or anybody who likes this idea, I think that there's a great idea for narratively accelerating training and say, okay, I'll give you, as a GM, a one-time bonus, +1, +2, maybe even 1D to this specific skill because of this time that we've trained together for whatever narrative purposes that fits. But making this mechanic really creates some inadvertent loopholes for some really out of control things to happen if you just have people team up with this instruction skill.
Yeah, the thing that I saw immediately that I didn't like was that what it effectively did was you could effectively have a 5D skill that you can improve that would only cost you one character point, which I thought was really unbalancing. Now, the thing that I suggest was treating instruction as a combined skill role for both the student and the teacher, where the student must roll a moderate knowledge skill roll, and if successful, adds a +1 pip to the teacher's instruction skill. And for every level of difficulty above moderate, reduces the training time by 1 day.
That could be helpful.
So what it does is it's not reducing the cost of the actual skill, but what it's doing is it's giving a reduction in the amount of time required to learn it. So, for example, if the teacher rolled, like, a difficult, it'd be -1 day, very difficult, -2, and so on. Now, as another idea, you could maybe subtract 1 day of training for every 5 points of success over moderate. You know, so if the teacher rolled better, perhaps they had a different training regime, you know, the student was really on par, you know, maybe it was one of those situations where it was just a teacher-student one-on-one, and they were able to get that information over very quickly. Just two options on how to do it.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, Daniel, do you have a movie of the week, sir?
I went with The Secret of Nim.
I love that movie!
So great.
Ooh, sparkly!
Don Bluth animation plus Dom DeLuise as Jeremy the Crow. And a wonderful, wonderful story. If you guys haven't read the book, read the books.
I have not read the books.
How it applies in a Star Wars adventure? Well, either the players are or are working against an Imperial research group that has worked on giving sentience to beasts or animals. They've been successful. The beasts have escaped, and the players are either out to save the animals or capture them.
Almost like a sort of an Island of Dr. Moreau kind of thing. I like it.
If one gets a hold of a force artifact, that could be interesting.
Yep, or what was it? Is it Piggy?
Yeah, Piggy.
There you go. That goes in there. That's right in Daniel's wheelhouse. Well, I keep getting razzed because I pick older movies for my movie of the week, so I went with How to Train Your Dragon. I felt that it was a really good, had some really interesting themes in it for Star Wars. I mean, if you treated the dragons as a new species or a lost species, trying to reconnect with, where there's a lot of misunderstanding between two cultures, where the two of them have to work together symbiotically to overcome some disaster. I liked the idea that there was a deficit shared by the two main characters, and that there was a something dramatic had to happen for them to realize that. For example, when the main human character had lost a foot, and then he realized that the dragon had lost one of its rear fins, and stuff like that. So, I mean, I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff that was available in there. There was humor in there. There were some trope characters, like the twins like to blow everything up and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, there was love. I mean, I thought there was a lot of things in there that were thematically Star Wars quality.
Just my
thoughts on it. Well, anyway, I'd like to go ahead and start off by saying, Mike, thank you so much for coming by today and
Wait, stop.
No, I don't want to stop. You stop.
You need to stop.
You both stop.
Mike, do you have a movie pick that could apply to a Star Wars adventure?
There's one movie that wasn't quite Star Wars themed enough, but you might be able to make some adaptations. And it's called Attack of the Clones.
I shoot him now. See, I thought he was going to throw out something like, you know, like Schindler's List or The Piano or Deerslayer.
The cheap joke was all that I had. I actually hadn't put a whole lot of thought into that. I was caught a little off guard. So yeah, the cheap joke is where I went. So, and I know I'm going to get hate mail, and I know that I deserve it from the prequel lovers. Sorry, guys, but yeah, I had to go with the cheap one.
Go with Big Trouble in Little China. I'll give it to you for free.
Oh, okay. Now that is a, you know, the move that movie has. I just watched that. It has. If you wanted to do kind of a slapstick or a, you know, a humorous type of adventure, which I do sometimes, that wouldn't be a bad sort of model to go with. Just getting sucked into this alternate realm of silly tropes. So Big Trouble in Little China makes sense.
I liked it. There you go. There's your freebie. I saved you, Mike. I saved you. I threw you a life preserver, baby.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
And I'm always there for you, brother. Always. All right. Well, I tell you what. I don't have anything else. Michael? Daniel?
Mike, it's a pleasure always. This may have been the second time we've had you on, but we've got to have you back.
Well, it's been a pleasure, guys, and I'd love to talk to you guys again. It's thank you so much for inviting me into your recording studio and for putting me up for the weekend. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely not a problem. And I tell you what, Mike, I definitely want you back for one of our GM discussions. I think that you'll have a lot to offer with that. It's the raising up kids GMs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately, we ran out of time today, but we'll go ahead and add that into the script for next time. And if you have time in your schedule, we'll go ahead and invite you back, and specifically to comment on that section.
Well, we'll see what we can do.
All right. Excellent. Daniel, that's all I've got. Tell the people about us.
Anybody wants to get in touch with us, there's so many ways to do it. We love hearing about your submissions. We love wanting, you know, bring your homebrew rules to the table. We'll talk about them. If we like them, yay. If we don't, well, that's where you have it. Get in touch with us on Twitter at SWD6Podcast. You can email us at shootingwantrats@gmail.com. We've even got a subreddit now at SWD6. You can find Don and I and even Mike over on the Ranker Pit. We're Shooting Want Rats, and Mike is Cheshire. So on behalf of Shooting Want Rats, I'm Daniel.
I'm Don.
And I'm Mike Fraley.
May the Force be with you.
Have a great weekend, guys.
Goodbye.